Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Game Trail Podcast. It's been a minute, but I'm back. Got another episode for you live today. I got a special guest. I'm going to give you a minute. I'm going to run through a promo, touch on some things, and then I'm going to introduce my guest for the day. I'm actually super excited about having the individual on today, but I'll wait for one more second. I'll belabor it, if you will. Before I get going, I'm going to hit you guys with a promo code. You guys can use the promo code GAMETRAIL. That's GAMETRAIL. If you use that promo code when you sign up for a Go Hunt Insider account, you're going to get 50 points back into the Go Hunt gear shop. 50 points is $50, so it's a one-for-one. You can use that towards the purchase of any gear that you want in the gear shop. So now's a great time to sign up for an Insider account if you're not already a member. There are still tons of opportunities to apply for tags and then also pick up over-the-counter tags in the summer. And that Insider Research account is going to give you the information that you need to know to find a hunt and execute on it and find some success this fall. I wanted to thank a sponsor of the podcast. Matthews is a sponsor of my podcast. Those guys have been super generous to me. They're a great company. They make a great bow. I wish that I could quit tinkering with my bow and just shoot the damn thing, but it just seems to be, I like to tinker, I like to shoot, but they make a phenomenal product, and I did want to thank them as a sponsor of the podcast. So with that, like I said, I got a guest today. This is a guest that I know quite well, which should be fun. We've got good rapport, good relationship, so it should be kind of funny to see what comes out of it today. But I'm going to introduce my guest today. I have Go Hunt's very own Brady Miller.
Dang trail. I am.
How was my intro?
That was really good. I was going to say it. Knowing your intro and how we normally do that, it came off really well. I really enjoyed the intro of your podcast. I was like, dang trail, you're professional.
Thanks, man. I try. I'm not very professional, but I try. How you been? We're doing this remote. You're in Vegas. I'm in Cedar.
I'm in Vegas and you're in Cedar. It feels kind of weird doing a podcast without you sitting next to me, but I am, like I said, I feel honored. Honored to be on your podcast.
Yeah, I asked Brady to do the podcast, and I think we both kind of giggled. We do work together. We do the Big Hunt Guys podcast together. I've known you for a long time, probably, what, 10 years, I guess? Yeah. 10, 11 years at this point, I would bet.
I consider you my brother.
Yeah, I agree, man. We've known each other for a long time, but I don't know that we've ever really had – I mean, we have chances to sit and talk, but – I haven't really had a chance to like sit and interview you, which is why I was excited about this. I think it'll be funny to kind of pick your brain, ask you some questions that I've wanted to. And then I also, just for people that are listening, I thought it would be fun for us to get to know you a little bit better. Just personally, I think we always talk hunting, right? I mean, we're always talking hunting. I know me, if I'm at the gas station or grocery store and somebody bumps into me, I'm always talking hunting. I think you and I are always talking hunting, but I thought it'd be kind of fun to give people maybe a glimpse under the hood and maybe get to know you a little bit better. So with that, I'm going to start with some questions, Brady.
I'm kind of scared. I have no clue what you're going to be asking me right now.
That is true. I did not tell Brady anything I was going to ask you. So I'm going to jump in. I heard this one actually on, I think maybe another podcast the other day. I thought it was an interesting question, given our day and age, but I wanted to hit you with this one first. So, would you rather live without the internet or without AC and heating, and why?
I'd rather live without the internet.
Would you? That's not what I thought you would say, to be honest.
I don't really care for the internet. I would rather be up in a mountain somewhere. Mm-hmm. I could totally be fine. Like my AC unit's been dead for a year and a half at my house, and I was surviving in Vegas with downstairs temperatures being up to like 80 degrees in the summer. And then my upstairs was the only thing that was cooling my house, and I was fine with it. And in the winter, I just put on down jacket and down pants, and I was hanging out by myself. I actually had friends come down, like, you know, Wilson and Lindsay from Montana, mm-hmm. came down to my house, and they would literally be like, Brady, you got any down clothes? Like, it's so freezing in your house. Because I did not have heat downstairs either. Like, I'm totally fine.
You don't have it anyway, though. So why wouldn't you? You probably choose the internet, right? Because you don't have heating or AC anyway.
Yeah. So like, I'm totally fine not having that. That's why we can get rid of the internet. It'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was interesting. I think the internet is like one of those things. I think it makes our lives a whole lot better in some regards, but I think there's a lot of cases where it makes it worse, which we'll dive into a little bit more.
And I don't need to watch TV. Like, I'd be fine not watching anything ever. going back to the days where nothing was casted online, no smartphones. Like those days I look back on, like I feel grateful that we grew up in that generation.
Yeah, I feel you. We're kind of the last of a dying breed, if you will. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember when the internet was invented. when Al Gore invented the internet, right?
Yes. I didn't even have a cell phone in high school. Like,
yeah, I didn't get one until I was 25, I think, 25 or 26. It was like the old Nokia. I don't remember if you remember that. That was my first cell phone, kind of shaped like an egg.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I got another one for you. Sushi or tacos?
Tacos.
Tacos.
Because you know me, I love burritos.
Yeah.
Like, is a burrito considered a taco? Because I could still go for that then. I love Mexican food a lot.
Gotcha. If you've been on a really tough 10-day hunt, you come out of the back country, you've been successful, you hit the trailhead, first town you hit, what are you looking for?
What am I looking for? I'm looking for a nice hot sandwich, like a toasted sandwich. Like a Quiznos type thing or anything. Oh, gotcha. anything toasted.
Okay.
I love
Jersey Mike's.
I would crush that. Crush it. And I'm still not like a pop or soda drinker or anything, so I wouldn't crave one of that, but I'd be just like, I want that, and I want like a Body Armor drink.
Okay.
Like badly.
Do you have any stories? Like, do you have any stories of that? Like where you've had a tough hunt, you're hungry, you're starving, you've been rationing your food. Do you have any recollection? Do you have any memories of that?
I have memories of what I crave sometimes. Like, for whatever reason, this is kind of odd to say, like, I don't have this a lot at home to begin with, but sometimes I'm in the mountains, I just start craving yogurt, granola, and honey. All mixed together. I don't know why. I just crave that, and I go home, and that's one of the first purchases I will make once I get back to my house, because it's harder to get that at a gas station, you know, driving home.
Yeah.
But I will literally go and get, you know, 5% like Greek yogurt, like super thick yogurt, take a bunch of like big chunky thick pieces of granola, and then some honey. Maybe it's because I'm like some backwoods hippie kind of guy in a weird way, but like that to me, if I could have that in the backcountry right then and there, I would just be a happy boy.
That's a good one. I like that. I never heard that before. I mean, I'll eat granola and yogurt sometimes, but it's not something
you got to put that honey. You got to put that honey on there. And I also forgot too. You need some cinnamon. And when I talk cinnamon, I'm not talking about a little sprinkle here and there. I'm talking about you're dumping it.
Gotcha.
You're dumping that cinnamon on there.
I love it. That's a great answer. All right, I'm gonna hit you with the next one. Would you rather not brush your teeth or not take a shower for 2 weeks?
I'd rather not take a shower for 2 weeks.
You got pretty good teeth, Brady. I'm looking at you right now. You got great teeth.
I try. My girlfriend also says the same thing. So I got to keep that. I got to keep that going. But I can go a long time without showering. It doesn't bother me. Like it, no joke, does not bother me at all. Like when I'm out there like 16 days hunting, I could go another 16 if I didn't have to work or didn't have a life. You know, I could continue this living out there without showering. Sure, my friends might not appreciate it. You know, smelling me, but I feel fine. I don't ever feel gross. I don't ever feel like my hair, like, oh, I need to do this, or my face itches or anything like that. I'm like, my body's naturally, I think, is adjusted to that.
Yeah. When you're on a long hunt, do you ever take a bath? Do you ever find a creek, find a lake, dive in, scrub up?
Honestly, no. The only time I ever remember doing that is on some really long backcountry work hitches back in the day where we'd be out there for like 17, you know, some days in the mountains. Mm-hmm. And that's literally hiking and sweating and shit, which is very similar to hunting, but I don't know why. Like then it was just like, oh yeah, we have nothing to do in the middle of the day, take a quick jump in a lake. And in Montana, there was, you know, water everywhere.
Sure.
But on hunts, not a whole lot. I can't remember the last time I actually, I guess on the moose hunt this last year, I didn't jump in the lake, but I had to wash my backpack because I was told my backpack smells like Black Death. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to attract all these grizzly bears everywhere because it just reeks.
Right.
And then after I washed it, it smelled worse because then it's like slightly wet still. And it's like the scent was coming up, but
yeah,
no, I don't normally bathe myself. I usually don't wash my socks or anything. I think at some archery hunts back in the day, I actually, I do remember taking off my boxers, taking off my socks, doing the old rubbing it with rocks, trying to like clean. I didn't have any soap, but just like putting in a little stream, and then I let it dry all day and then I put them back on. So I guess I did that.
I've done it a few times. I think it's largely like early season hunts. So like early season archery hunts, when you're hot and sweaty, you don't want to chafe.
Yeah.
You know, maybe halfway through your hunt, you find a nice creek. You got middle of the day. I did it on that, that Utah elk hunt that I had. My camera guy and I, we were probably halfway through the hunt and we'd just been sweating our asses off. I mean, it was so hot, mid 90s every single day. And yeah, we found this nice creek, had a little pool in it. We both took a bath. Separately, obviously, but we did take a bath and it felt pretty damn good. The other time that I've done it is, like when I've been on a backpack hunt and I've killed an animal and I've got like a day, maybe it's like mid afternoon. I've got the animal broken down and I'm looking at maybe 2 or 3 days of packing an animal out, or I've got a packer coming. If I've got water close by, I like to do it then. It's like a little celebration. You know, hike down to a creek, take a nice bath, get your mind right for the next day.
Yep. Do you ever think when you're back there, who is watching me right now take this little bath?
Yeah.
Because I've seen people get naked in the backcountry. Like,
yeah.
They're mostly like hikers and stuff like that, like celebrating on peaks and stuff like that. But like it happens.
Yeah.
Especially with dudes with optics out there, they're hunting at the same time. They're like looking down the basin and all of a sudden there's trail. Showing off his white backside, taking a little bath.
Man, it is white, bud. It is translucent at this point in the winter. That's funny. All right, I'm going to hit you with the next one. You have a long solo road trip. You're driving. You got a destination hunt. You're going. What are you listening to? Are you listening to podcasts? You listen to a book on tape? You listen to music? Ooh, what's Brady Miller listening to?
That's a really good one. So usually if I'm by myself and I'm doing long trips, I like to jam out to podcasts because this is the only time I can really dive into podcasts. And I'm kind of listening to podcasts that are outside the hunting industry.
Okay.
Just trying to get other inspiration. Like, obviously, you know, I listen to some Rogan. I'll download some of that and play that. But a lot of like Huberman Lab, like Nick Bear's podcast, some fitness type stuff.
Yep.
Like something that I just want to learn new things.
Mm-hmm.
I use that as my time to expand my knowledge or learn a task I don't know how to do or be more proficient at something I'm not good at. But then then that's like a certain time of day though, until it gets to like, cause I like night driving a lot. Mm-hmm. So I'll drive all night and then just, you know, crash at a trailhead, sleep for a couple hours and then pick up and go. And then that whole day I'm groggy and mad that I didn't just drive everything the day before, but always with work, I'm leaving right at the end of the day, driving all night. But once it hits that, like, 11:30 type time frame, and then it's got to switch over to some like Wu-Tang, some Dre.
Oh, yeah.
I gotta get pumped up a little bit and like listen to some jam out music. I love country music, that's my jam, but
yeah,
I need something to pump me up. So it's a lot of old school, you know, like I said,
that's really Wu-Tang. Funny you remember Nick that used to work with us?
Yeah,
I just sent him a post I saw the other day that it says, it was like one of those presidential signs that's in the front of people's yards, you know, and it's got like stars and stripes and all that. And it says, presidents are temporary. Wu-Tang is forever.
Wu-Tang forever, baby.
That really surprised me. I wouldn't have picked you to be listening to Wu-Tang.
I even listen to some Rammstein too.
Oh yeah. I love some Rammstein.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Du Hast, right? Du Hast Nate.
Yes. It's like I just need something to, you know, keep myself awake even easier.
Yeah.
And I feel like I got, you know, trucking in my blood because my parents, you know, my dad owns a trucking company. So I love driving long nights. But like that switch becomes no educational anymore. Now it's just pump up music for the rest of the duration.
Did you ever do any long haul trucking, long haul driving? You got your CDL license?
No, it's one thing I never did in life is actually got mine. But I did go on some road trips with my dad when I was younger. When he was like, go to Chicago or Wisconsin or something like that. But no, I do dig that life. A lot of people give truck drivers a bad rap, but I'm like, truck drivers, those are the guys who are really good at driving. So sure. I trust myself on the road next to truck drivers rather than trusting myself with general civilians driving around. They're great drivers. They know what they're doing. And I'm like, I feel really comfortable pulling into a truck stop. I'm like, hey, these are probably my homies. Even though it is also because I'm a guy and I understand that like it's easier for a guy to go park at truck stops and, you know, if a female hunter's going out. But no,
sometimes
never got my truck license. One of those things I probably should have gotten back in the day.
There's still time. I've kicked around the idea. I'm like, man, maybe I should go get my CDL.
Yeah, I can see you driving around. You're the podcast king, so you'd be listening to all sorts of podcasts or like
yeah
ebooks and stuff.
I do get a lot of time behind the wheel, driving back and forth to places, especially Vegas. Sometimes I like to play a game when I'm down there to Vegas, especially if I'm driving home in the evening. Like every vehicle that I'll pass, I'll just take a peek over there, see if they're on their phone. And I would say it's a pretty damn high percentage, man.
Of folks
on their phone while they're driving. But you're right, long haul truckers, your livelihood depends on it, so you gotta keep it between the lines. All right, I got one for you. This is a question I've been meaning to ask on the main podcast. I wanted to ask both you and Lorenzo, but I'm going to hit you with it right now. So how do you feel about hearing your own voice in content? So you do a lot of podcasts, you do video. I just saw you were doing an Instagram live. You and Paul were talking bear hunting, but like, do you feel like me? Do you hate the sound of your own voice?
I don't know what it is, Trill, but I absolutely hate this. I think I hate the sound of my voice.
Yeah, me too. I think it's just like human, right? Everybody hates it.
I think it's very rare that I'll ever listen to a podcast I'm on. Even if it's you, me, and Lorenzo, and it's a good conversation, I'm like, dang, I do want to listen to that again. Because like, when it comes to me talking, I'm like, man, I sound like I don't know, just the way my voice comes across. But then I know I have other people like, dude, I love when you're talking, like, keep expanding on things. You're so great. You're like, articulate things sometimes. I'm like, I just can't stand my own voice.
Yeah. Have you ever wondered, like, this is the kind of random shit I think about when I'm out poking around running or something, but you ever wondered, like, if you could sound like somebody else, who would you want to sound like?
Oh, that is a really good question.
Oh, why are you thinking about it? I'll tell you. So I was thinking about it. You seen Tombstone?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the oldest brother, I think his name's Sam Elliott. And then he played the hippie in Parks and Rec. I think Sam Elliott's got a great voice. I think that'd be a nice catch.
Yeah, Sam Elliott would be really good. Sometimes I wish I had an accent though too. I wish I had some like British accent, you know, like I've been watching a lot of Ted Lasso lately.
Right.
And I was like, dang, like some of those voices, like that sounds like a good voice.
Man, I cannot fathom you with a British accent. I cannot. I mean, I lived over there for a few years. And you get all kinds of like different dialects of the same accent, I guess. But I can't imagine you with a British accent. That would be hilarious.
So right now on my iPhone, my Siri, my Siri is set to a female British accent.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Every now and then I switch between a female British accent for Siri or an Australian accent.
How often do you use Siri?
Lately, I've actually started to use her a little bit more. I'm learning. Really? Like if I'm like, hey, Siri, remind me to bring, my BTX tomorrow for a film thing. Like I just said it and now I have a notification popped up on my phone that she just added that. Like, because if I don't start doing that, I'm going to type it in or write a note. And like, you see my desk right now, I have a million sticky notes everywhere. So it's becoming a lot more valuable to just have a reminder to myself to go and do that by telling Siri to do it for me.
Yeah. I can honestly say I've never asked Siri to do anything. I can't ever remember using Siri.
Oh, she's great. And now lately too, I picked up one of those little HomePods. It's a little Bluetooth speaker so I can listen to music in my house. I'm starting to try to listen to music more, just random podcasts. So I'll get home and be like, hey Siri, play this. And she'll just go and start playing it for me. It's actually really convenient. And like, hey, set alarm tomorrow at whatever time, if I need to do something, or remind me at this time to text Trail about some important thing he has to do tomorrow for an article. Like, it's great.
Yeah. I'm going to have to get more familiar with Siri then. I don't ever use it ever. So that's interesting you say that.
I also though hate that the people are listening to me all the time too. I'm also one of those people that's like, I don't like things constantly listening to my conversations, and the government knows anything already. So it's like, I guess whatever.
For sure. Let me hit you with one more. This is a good one for you. I'm interested in this one for sure. I think I know the answer, but I'm interested in your reply. So would you rather ask for help with a difficult task or figure out how to do it yourself, and why?
Oh, Trail, I love your questions. I don't like asking for help. I'd rather just sit down and figure out the problem myself. Cause I feel one, it's a learning moment for me. And I understand, everyone keeps telling me I need to start learning how to delegate more and like maybe push things around or ask other people right away when I need something. I'm like, I'd rather take that 10, 15 minutes, figure that thing out, do it myself. And that way I can do it later better and more efficient than just having someone else help me. Or like if I go into a store, you dang well know I'm not going to ask where things are at. I'm going to walk up and down every aisle to find it out, because it's like any, you know, Parks and Rec. And he's like, I know more than you. Like, don't ask me. I know where everything's at, but I don't. But it's just that I'd rather just do it myself always, no matter how long it takes, figure it out, than ask someone else for help.
How do you approach that in terms of hunting situations? How does that relate? Do you like asking, let's say that you want to hunt a new area, you want to apply for a new area, you draw a tag, you buy a tag. Do you feel the same kind of way about it in the way you approach a hunt?
Yeah. And that's what I think I need to get better at. Cause I know we've talked before about, like, I'd never pick up the phone and call a biologist.
Mm-hmm.
I have never talked to any state person or anyone in that sense. When, like, I drew a tag, I want to get some intel on it. I feel bad asking for help in a sense.
You feel bad, or do you feel on the flip side of it, do you feel like you have the knowledge and the resources just innately within you to figure it out? And then do you feel like a certain sense of satisfaction knowing that you did it on your own?
I do think it's more of a satisfaction thing that I know, like, I found the area, I researched the area, I learned about it myself, I know what tools I can find, I'm fine digging up biology reports, learning about things myself, and I feel like then I learn more. But I also feel like towards the biologist thing, I don't want to call someone and burn up their time, because I understand everyone's time is very valuable. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, maybe they have something else they're working on right now and they don't want to talk to a hunter. They just talk to 15 other hunters. I don't want to get the same information they're probably giving out to everyone. And that might sound great to me. And then I might think in the back of my head, like, oh, maybe I should go and do that information. But then I go and listen to them. And then I realize once I get there that they told a bunch of other people that same thing. And now it's a lot of people that I'd rather see a lot of people, but have it be my own research that I ended up in the same spot as everyone else. And I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. It was my doing that I'm here. Not because I listen to someone else, but I think it is something I need to work on maybe, and be more open to ask those sort of questions. I'm sure they would help me a lot.
Do you think there's value in it? And I guess the question, like, if a new hunter comes to you and asks you, do you think I should call a biologist? Do you think I should talk to other people that have hunted the area? Do you think that's worth my time? How do you answer that question?
I think 100% it is for that person. Okay. Yeah, I would tell people all the time too. And that's why I also like helping people too. So it's one of those weird things that I'm a resource where people can, you know, send me a comment on an article or comment on YouTube, ask me a question. I'd be glad to help them. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I don't have time to do it all always, but like, I like giving advice and I like telling people that they should do that. If that's their way to do it and it makes cuts down the learning curve, sure.
Right.
Go ask some questions. I know every now and then, you know, I bounced some ideas off you. So I guess it's kind of like the same thing. Am I like, whatever, when New Mexico draws, like, do you think I should do this for elk or not? Mm. Like, I was kind of asking you my question, even though I knew my answer, but I just wanted to see if my thought mentality meshed with your thought mentality a little bit. So I guess I was asking you a question, even though I still kind of knew it, but it was just a reassuring thing. Like, you thought I was on the right track in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's different scenarios, right? I mean, I think situations like that, when you're trying to decide where to apply, I think it's always good to, you know, try to ask somebody that has some information, or somebody that you look at, you kind of respect their opinion, and, you know, you can bounce ideas off of each other and kind of go that route. When it comes to, like, individual areas, I'm kind of like you. I do like to call people. I like to, you know, pick their brain and find out what they have to say, but I'm always taking it with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, okay, that's interesting. I'm going to add that to, you know, my notes page. I'm going to go back and look at it, see what I can dig up on my own and, you know, see what sticks ultimately. Cause I'm with you. I think biologists, game wardens, taxidermists, you know, a lot of those guys are giving the same types of information to most people, which there's value in that.
There is, for sure.
It's not that it's a bad idea. It's just that you don't want to get in there and then just be bombarded with a bunch of other people as well.
Yeah. And I do think too, cause I do, I'm like a little, you know, introvert. I don't like to, you know, just talk to everyone, but I will lean on more friends. And I guess I do have a, you know, quite large hunting friend network in the industry. So I will bounce some ideas that way in a sense. But again, at the end of the day too, I'm still very secretive of where I go. And I think that plays into it, even though I know sometimes I don't need to be, even like at the office, like most people here don't know where I hunt and I don't like telling people. And I joke all the time that I just hunt Mexico for every species that I go hunt, because just,
I, I think we were in a marketing meeting yesterday and somebody asked Brady and Brady gave the answer that he normally gives, which is like, you know, he'll some random like Mexico for Black Bear or whatever. And I think Porter said, you know, Brady, nobody gives a shit here in this marketing meeting where you're hunting.
Yeah, but to me, I was like, if I tell everyone it's Mexico, I don't want someone at the marketing meeting to then talk to another company like, oh yeah, Brady's going here for bears. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden that person talks to someone else like, oh, Brady went here for bears. Interesting. Why did you not do the other state? And then they realize maybe they found out they saw me driving and like, oh, he was near this town. And then it sort of pieces it together that they end up finding mm-hmm. my spot somehow, even though it's indirectly. And that person who knew it didn't mean anything by it, but just casually said it. So I'm just, yeah, I'm very psycho about it.
Yeah. What do you, I like head games with people because I know we've discussed this, but I like to just tell people exactly where I go and under the assumption that they think I'm lying.
Yeah.
Well, then I'm just going to float it. I mean, is that a head game in itself?
It is. You've caught me before where I think we were having some discussion on the Big Hunt Guys podcast where I set a state and so I was like, dang it. And you were like, yeah, Brady, you caught yourself in saying too many lies all the time. And if you would have said it, then you wouldn't have had that response afterwards. And that response, you totally gave it because you knew you caught yourself right there saying the truth. Mm-hmm. And you just lie constantly. And it's just like natural sometimes to say things. And
yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fun game. All right. I got one for you. This is a good one. You're going to love it. Let's say, which one of these situations are you picking and why? Let's say that you have 2 days to hunt in the best mule deer unit in a state, or you get 10 days in a unit that took 1 point to draw. Which one are you picking and why?
Gang Trail.
Do you like that one?
That's a good one. 2 days in the best. Do I get to lean on anyone for the best?
Nope.
Okay.
All you on your own. 2 days in the best unit in the state.
And that's the only chance. That's the only chance I'll ever get to do that 2 day in the best.
That's it. You got to pick one or the other. You get 2 days in the best unit in the state, no intel, or you get 10 days in a 1 point unit. You have all the time to prep and prepare.
I'm going 10 days in a 1 point unit because I feel like in 10 days, I'm going to learn that unit. I can prep so much ahead of time. I'll know that unit on day four, like the back of my hand. And then mm-hmm. it's something too, if it's only taking me 1 point, I can come back there again, use that intel. And I always tell people too, I'd rather kill an animal on the last day of the hunt all the time. They're like, oh, why pass up something on day one that you shoot on the last day? Well, I'd still love to shoot on the last day because I'm learning something every single day throughout that hunt. I'm learning about that animal, I'm learning about myself. I'm learning about the terrain, the gear I'm using, my hunting style that then I can use on future hunts. Where if I only have 2 days, and I'm running around crazy, trying to figure it out really quickly. Don't have any time to do anything. Sure, I could probably feel like in my level of knowledge, maybe figure out, you know, where to kill a good deer. We're talking hopefully mm-hmm. deer here.
Yeah, deer. We're talking deer.
Okay, good. A good deer in that unit and probably could have a great time and maybe shoot a big deer. But I also think too, those, like I've cut my teeth on low, easy point units all the time and still pull out some big deer every now and then. Yeah, sometimes the weather and Mother Nature's against me and there's no big deer in the area for whatever reason, but like 10 days, man, a lot can happen in 10 days.
Sure.
You can see something, you can see something magical in some of those easy to draw units.
Yeah. Yeah. I figured that would be your answer. I thought that would be your answer for a few reasons. I thought one, you would say you just like the experience. I know how much you like to hunt, right? So mm-hmm. 10 days for you is it's not really wrapped up in an animal. It's 10 days to test yourself, to hunt, to be in the outdoors and, you know, get that experience as a whole. So I kind of thought that might be your answer. The other thing I think, this is just my own personal thoughts. I mean, 2 days in the best unit in a state. I mean, yeah, you'd probably kill a good deer, but I don't know. I don't think it would mean as much to me.
No,
as 10 days killing a nice buck or even an average buck where I ground it out in a 1 point unit.
Yeah. We've talked about that before on side conversations, like the whole, like hunting private land, like sure. Would it be great mm-hmm. to go hunt the best private land and kill a big animal and just show up, get it done and leave? Maybe, but I feel like you're cheating yourself.
Yeah.
Like, sure, I would love to be in the position financially to, you know, get a lease or something like that or have a sick property I can manage and hunt it myself every year. But, like, the grind, like you said, the adventure, the places I get to go, this country I get to see, like, that's why I hunt the places I do. It's not always because they're going to be big animals, but the testing myself mentally, physically, learning about something, learning about animals that I mean. It's like I cherish that. I cherish my time away. I cherish my solo time disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
Like I love that part of it.
Yeah. The older I get, the more everything is just so routine, right? So it's like I get up in the morning, you know, I have the same routine, I run the same route, you know, I make breakfast for my kids, I run the dog. It's just like the same routine. I go to bed a lot of nights and I think, man, did anything really like, you know, that matters or anything that was like really memorable happen today? And there's a lot of days, I think it's pretty common for the older you get, like there's a lot of days where it doesn't, it just drifts by, it's another day, right? So for me, you know, a day in the woods, it's like really important to me at this stage of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's really critical. It's something that I remember. It's something I look forward to, something I cherish. So I completely relate on choosing 10 days.
Yeah. I even look back like growing up, you know, like growing up those times when I went out in the lake trapping or duck hunting or sitting in a deer stand, like mm-hmm. those were days that I feel like I learned more about life than I did anywhere else. You know,
yeah.
You learn about yourself. Learn about it. So if something goes wrong, I know how to take care of it. And I can use that towards other things in my life. Like it's just experience.
Yeah, I agree. I wanted to ask you something. We've talked about this a little bit before. I've seen this question pop up on comments, whether it's on social media or YouTube. I was interested in knowing like if you'd want to talk about it. But the question is why did Brady Miller stop bow hunting?
I was honestly wondering if this was going to be the chance this question would get brought up being on.
Did you think I would ask this question?
I did think about you were going to ask this question. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is it okay?
Yeah. I'm willing to talk about it. It's definitely one of those sensitive subjects and I've grown, you know, to understand I can talk about it, but yeah, my, basically I retired from bow hunting in 2015 and yeah, go for it.
I was going to say, when you say retire, do you mean like retire? Like you don't think you'll ever pick it back up or do you think you'll have some interest in, you know, maybe doing it again at some other stage in your life?
I've been getting a little bit more interested in doing it again, but for the longest time, like after I can explain why it happened, but I was like, basically I gave up something I love completely. I just lost the passion for it, lost the drive, lost the everything about bow hunting. I lost it. And this is coming from someone who used to be literally psycho bow hunter. Like I used to make fun of rifle hunters, like legit,
right.
Like not like the whole banter on the internet you see like a little bit, but it's like, I just didn't want to ever rifle hunt. I was like, I love the challenge of bow hunting. I love practicing. I love geeking out, building my own arrows, weighing my arrows, making arrows clones of each other. You know, all this tuning in my garage, you know, to like walk back tuning, French tuning, everything, just like build my own hooter shooter. Like mm-hmm. I literally built everything back in the day to become the best bow hunter I could be, shooting tournaments. Like I love 3D tournaments. I shot every weekend in Montana. I was gone driving around the state shooting a 3D tournament.
Right.
Like I was hooked, like addicted. I even went to British Columbia on a moose and mountain goat hunt. And I said, I was going to take a bow. And the guy laughed at me. He's like, no one's ever taken just a bow. Like, are you sure? He's never had a mm-hmm. bow hunter. Went up there and I killed a mountain goat the second day with my bow, the first stock, and I killed the moose on the day after. Like in less than 24 hours, I killed the moose and the mountain goat with my bow. Like I was that.
Yeah, and that's I remember that. I remember you being completely diehard. You know, completely geeked out on everything. I mean, you still have all the equipment. I mean, you still have everything that you would possibly need to, and you do. I mean, you still have a bow. I've seen you shoot it. We've shot some rounds and things. But I'm curious, like, why? What happened?
Yeah.
Like,
so
when you say you lost the passion for it, did was that just kind of a gradual or what happened?
No, it was one strict moment that basically just lost it for me. And it was on a deer hunt in Colorado. We did a film on it called Into Thin Air.
Mm-hmm.
So I was with Lorenzo, backpacked way in. We found this absolute giant deer. Like, I don't know what exactly score, but he's probably 205, 207, somewhere in that range. A lot of kickers, inlines, all sorts of just trash all over him. Made a sweet epic stalk on this deer, got all the way above him, blew him out at 25 yards once, couldn't get drawn on him because there's two other bucks with him, restocked on him, went off the backside of the mountain, these like mountain goat terrain, came up and over, this like 170 buck was bedded 40 yards away, could have easily stuck an arrow, and I was like, no, I'm waiting for this big buck. This big buck went down this big mountain goat little cliff area, he turned around, was coming right back to his bed. I was like, this buck can't go over there, there's nowhere to bed, it's in the sun, he's got to come back to this tree I'm on. So I was in a perfect position, down on my knees. This buck comes walking over. And since I spooked him like pretty much an hour earlier, I didn't want to whistle at him because I didn't want those two little bucks below me to all of a sudden look up and blow out and the big buck would blow. So I came to full draw, 51 yards. Remember, like, it was the day, like, I'm right in their position at full draw. I think I was kind of nervous a little bit, but I think I was in the zone because I'd killed so many animals with my bow, been all these other crazy places. And I felt confident in just letting him walk, letting him walk, and then just touch off that shot when he was walking. And yeah, it's looking back, it's a bad decision to do that. But I was like, I felt confident, put a little bit in front, touch it off. But I didn't know he was, you know, walking at a little faster gait than I thought. And I hit him like mid body, last rib, blew right through him. Blood everywhere as he's running down, separated off from the other two other bucks. So I'm going to this timber patch and walk down there, grab the arrow, complete pasture. Like I said, little bone fragments on there, a lot of blood, but just back, you know, like some, some gut blood and everything like that. And thought I could recover it. That night, it downpoured rain harder than I'd ever experienced in my entire life, like literally a thunderstorm. And I probably had like, I can't remember, like 4 or 5 hours that day. I could have stalked him again, like went back down there, but like, I'm just gonna give him time. You know, best scenario in that case is just to give an animal time. Like, yeah, I shot him, complete pass through, and he separated off from the bucks. He looked like he was hurt as he was running down there and instantly bedded in a patch of trees. Like, he's gonna be in those trees in the morning. So that night, like I said, it downpoured hard later that afternoon, and gave him almost 27 hours, I think it was 24 hours, something like that, from when I actually went down to recover him. And went down there and found one track in the mud, found a spot that seemed like he had maybe bedded and smelled like some guts, you know? And then there was also a black bear in the area. So I'm like, gosh, I don't like a black bear being in there. Maybe he kicked that buck up when he was bedded and the buck ran somewhere else. But I spent like 3.5 or 4 full days zigzagging through all those willows. Like, literally had my GPS tracked on the whole time, making sure I covered everything, looked at that whole area, and never turned up that buck. Literally, I had chances to kind of hunt, and some people are like, oh, you didn't give that deer a lot of time to find it. It's like, well, I gave it 3.5 days to find it. I did not hunt a deer the rest of the time. We hunted the deer for Lorenzo.
Sure.
But then I was thinking, like, that deer's got to be here. So we had three of us, myself, Mather was there, and Lorenzo. We all were gritting for those amount of days. And I tried to go down there a little extra time and try to grit it out, try to find that deer. Could never recover it. Tried going lower, tried wondering what happened to this deer. Like, why is he not here? Am I walking past him because the brush is so high? Ran into an elk hunter in there that I had on the film. He reached out to me on Instagram after he saw the film. He's like, hey, man, we hunt up there all the time. You know, well, moral of the story is we never found that buck. So that was the first time I'd ever lost an animal in my life.
Okay.
And so I think it hit me extra hard that it was also a big giant deer. I felt bad for it, but I also feel bad. It's an animal's life. And now either he died or he's going to live a horrible life for a little bit and probably die later. Not knowing the outcome, but those elk hunters said, like, hey, we're in there every year elk hunting. If we somehow come across that buck, we'll let you know. Like, we want to get that buck back to you, which I thought was so cool.
Right.
Like, these guys saying that. And like, after that, I think it was, went up to a range and I was shooting with you. I believe I was shooting with you. And like, I literally sailed an arrow at 40 yards, like 10 feet to the right. Like, I was mentally broke down. Like, shooting a bow after that was not fun anymore. Yeah. I just kept thinking of that moment in my head, thinking about losing that deer, the biggest deer I'd ever seen in my life. And I had to make a bad shot and lost that deer. And it just kept weighing heavy on me. Like, this isn't fun anymore. I understand that a bow is very lethal. I'd killed a lot of animals with my bow, but I just lost it in my head.
Yeah.
I was broke down to the point where it's like, you know, just hating everything about picking up a bow again. I just didn't like the thought of it. Didn't like practicing with it anymore. Didn't like shooting it. Didn't want to go on any bow hunts anymore. And I tried doing a few like after that a little bit, but never had a chance to like draw back. I was still like, I don't know why I'm doing this. Like, in my head, constantly just like not enjoying the process of getting ready for a bow hunt when before I'd be all about it. And then lost the passion and then picked up a rifle and then started doing the same thing. And so I don't know, like, hindsight to me is like, if I would have recovered that deer, I'd probably still be a bow hunter. But then I think at the same time, maybe something happened for a reason. And then I learned something else and now I've gone on some crazy adventures with the rifle and taking a lot of other big deer. But like, that still weighs on me heavily, losing that deer and having it be the biggest deer of my life. And I just, from that moment on, it just, the passion of bow hunting just died with me. And it's crazy to say, like, oh, just get, you know, get the monkey off your back, go out there and like, you know, try to do it again. But it's like that, the passion I had was so deep. Like, I loved bow hunting to the core. It was my life. Like, every night I would shoot. I'd shoot in my garage. I'd shoot in my house. Like, I'd shoot with fletchings off at a piece of string, just working on shot execution, shot execution. I love that practice. And it just, that one moment just made it die. I've never been able to get it back again.
It's interesting. This is kind of a question, and maybe you already answered it, but maybe you can speak to it a little bit, but have you ever had a hunting experience? You ever been out in the woods, had an experience that made you question why you do it?
Yeah.
I mean, what was that experience? I mean, I know that you lost the passion for bow hunting, and it's interesting. I've talked to people before, you know, why doesn't Brady bow hunt? And I've kind of told them, I think he had this experience, and people, that's what I think is so fascinating about people. Like, we all have the same, I mean, we all have DNA, we all, you know, same parts, pieces and everything, but like, our minds work so completely different. We mm-hmm. feel different things. We process things so completely differently. And, everybody, if you talk to people, most bow hunters, they'll all tell you like, oh, if you've bow hunted long enough, you're going to hit an animal and lose it. Right.
Yep.
It's like, it's kind of nonchalant even, you know, you kind of, people move past it. They blow past it. I think I've hit an animal and lost it. I don't know if it's a way of like justifying it. I hope that's not the case, because, you know, ultimately the goal is to, you know, make a clean kill with an arrow and be ethical. Right. Mm-hmm. I hope that's not the case of why people say it. But yeah, I mean, there are those experiences, and in that experience, I mean, did you consider not hunting again after that?
Like with a bow?
Like at all?
Oh, I don't know. That never crossed my mind. I just felt like maybe I'm not a bow hunter. Maybe I started questioning all my other stuff I've done. Maybe I was lucky in a sense for everything else I did, or mm-hmm. had the perfect situation. And then part of me is like, why are you just giving up on something that you're passionate about? Like, that seems kind of crazy, you know, in a sense. But I was like, I still wanted to hunt, but I definitely, like, I respect animals a lot. Like, it looks like I just, you know, go out there and, you know, shoot animals, have mounts everywhere. It's like a thing, but it's like, I truly love hunting animals, and that, like, the chase, the adventure, the places they take me. So that's always why I think I'll always hunt, because of that. It's like the places animals take me. But that moment I questioned why was I ever a bow hunter?
Yeah.
Maybe I took it nonchalant and didn't practice as much, or did something that week before. You know, I started blaming, like, I was shooting a fixed blade broadhead. So mm-hmm. I even had my head, I've hunted with fixed blades for moose and bigger game, but for mule deer, antelope, everything else, I would shoot expandable. So it's like, I started trying to blame it on my gear. Maybe it was my gear thing that people start doing, jump down that rabbit hole. And it's like, well, I can't quite blame it on my gear, because I know it can perform. But instead, in my head, I was like, well, what if I had expandable? What if it cut a bigger, you know, entrance and exit and hit something good and vital, and I would have recovered it? Like, was it just mental state that wasn't there? Like, should I have even been in that position to hunt a giant deer like that? Maybe I don't deserve to go after such a big animal. Maybe I'm not meant for that experience, because maybe I just broke down and I didn't realize it, that I was shaking so hard. Like, I can't mm-hmm. remember. I feel like I just blacked out in the moment and just did my thing, you know, felt good, but
yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know it hurt.
I know you're an analytical guy, so I'm quite certain that any kind of emotional anguish that you felt has probably been tenfold, because I know that you like to evaluate and rethink. And I mean, you basically just explained all the things that you've probably played back over in your head a billion times. Mm-hmm. And it's like I said, I mean, everybody's a little bit different on how they process things. And I don't think there's anything wrong with a person looking themselves in the mirror and saying, you know what, I just don't feel the passion like I used to for this thing. You know, this experience affected me more than it might somebody else, and this is the path I'm choosing to take forward. And, you know, who's to say that you don't decide in the future to pick it back up? You start to enjoy it, you want to do it. I think that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, like, since then too, like, I've developed, and I know you can fix this, and I've tried to fix this and tried to work on, but I've developed the worst case of target panic ever. Like, I've gotten to the point now, I can't even shoot a button anymore. I used to love shooting a thumb button. I have to shoot a tension release, and I kind of don't like the idea of shooting a tension release hunting, because if I pull back on the wall too hard and let go of my safety, it's going to go off. It did that on the Iron Buck challenge we had. You know, like, the moment I'm just there, like, pulling back super hard on the wall and let go. And, like, I used to shoot a hinge all the time too. Like, I used to shoot a hinge very, very well in tournaments.
Yeah.
And never hunted with a hinge, but I can punch the heck out of a hinge. I know exactly what you need to do to punch a hinge. Like, it's just in my head. And I know I can try to train that out and try to work on it. But to me, it's just like working on it and doing it just brings back that memory. It brings back that moment in my head where it's like, hey, remember when you did this and you sailed an arrow and lost the animal? Could that happen again? So it's like, I can't haven't been able to break myself up. And I love shooting my bow still. I do enjoy going to the range, you know, doing that. But I try to now take it slowly as like, it's just fun.
Yeah.
Like that's what I'm trying to reconvince myself. This is just fun. This is not a pressure situation. Just enjoy every moment. One arrow goes down. That's the only arrow I controlled. Next arrow is going to be totally different. Like just think of it as a fun, enjoying and not trying to put pressure on myself. Because I am that guy who like, I want that pin just to sit there and I want it to go exactly where I put it. Cause that's what I remember doing back in the day when I was really good. And now I can't get back to that. So now I'm like an athlete who gives up on their sport for a while and thinks you're like, oh, I think I'm a stud 4-star college athlete, you know, and really I haven't picked up a basketball in forever. Like, no,
I need
to get back to that point. I need to do those steps that I took to get there. But that drive and that passion just isn't there for me to want to get to that level again, maybe in my head. There's a mental blockage.
No, I think that's okay. And I appreciate you answering because I know people have asked. So I thought I would pick your brain about it. And I think it takes, you know, it takes guts to admit, right? Like it takes some vulnerability to put yourself out there and explain a situation. So I appreciate it.
And it's one of those situations too where I know I put myself out there on the internet and I know a lot of people commented on there like, good for you for showing that. Like it happens, like you said, it does. If you bow hunt long enough, it's going to happen. And then, you know, you hate reading the negative comments. When you read the negative comments about like, you're the worst person in the world, you're scum, like you let that animal suffer. And it's like, bud, I guarantee you, you probably lost an animal too. And you think you do everything you could. Sure, maybe I should have drove back up there again and like tried to hike through those mountains, try to find that deer. But I did everything in the time that I could to try to recover it. And it's one of those things that I always will look back on, like the what ifs. What if I did something different?
Yeah.
Like, what if I went in there right away after I shot him and, you know, gave him 2 hours? And then try to stalk him during that rainstorm before it got dark and rained all night again. Like, what if I did that?
Yeah. What if, right?
What if?
You just, you'll never know. And you could beat yourself up till the end of time about it, but you just, it's not going to change the outcome. It just is what it is.
Yep.
I mean, that's like a cliche saying, but I think it holds so much truth in a lot of situations. I mean, a lot of times you just got to let it go of it because it just literally is what it is. It's going to be that way forever and you can't change it. Can't do anything about it. So
can't live life on what ifs.
Yeah. Let me, I'm going to switch gears a little bit, but I wanted to ask you, is hunting the West and the type of hunting that you do, would you consider it more mentally or physically demanding?
That's an awesome question. And I try to explain this to people a lot and I don't think people understand it because it seems like an easy answer. They always ask like, what defines your success when you're in the mountains? Like, how are you so successful a lot? And I fully believe it straight comes down to mental preparation. And again, it's going into what I just talked about, but it's like, this is a different type of mental thing. Like, I feel like if you're mentally strong, you will succeed all the time when you need to succeed. Like that's way more important than anything else when you're hunting out West. Like if you have the mental toughness, like I'm going to go hike 7 miles over there and maybe my base camp's 7 miles back again, I will do that. Because I just want to experience what it's like over there. Like I'm willing to do whatever I need to do in the mountains to try to find success. And it's all mental to me. It might suck getting over there, even if I still have physical prep, but it's all breaking down in mental. When should I stay out there? If it's a snowstorm, I'm still sitting out there doing it. I'm not going to pack up and leave. I'm not going to leave 20 minutes early when I can glass all night and hike back in the dark. I'm fine doing that. The mental side is everything here in the mountains.
So and I agree with you. I've known some guys that were definitely, you know, bigger dudes, myself included. I'm a little bit bigger dude. Like I just had mac and cheese for lunch. I mean, I'm running my miles. I like to run just, you know, for my mental clarity and, you know, I do physical, but I'm not the best as far as diet goes. And say I'm a bigger guy. I'm not the best. I'm definitely not in the best shape and I could be in better shape, but I think, you know, mentally, I'm kind of with you. Like, I just feel like when I leave on a hunt, like mentally, I will do whatever it takes. Like I'll pack it however, you know, far I got to go. And I've known a lot of guys that have been really successful that are bigger guys or out of shape that still have the mental fortitude to be successful every single hunt. But that term mental toughness or, you know, it's all mental. Like you hear that thrown around quite a bit. And I think you've already touched on a little bit saying that I guess that we would both kind of consider what is mental toughness in hunting. And I think if you could boil it down, it would be like, it's just that willingness to just do whatever it takes to be successful, right? To just, you know, go wherever you need to go, stay out as long as you need to go to be, you know, endure whatever it is that you need to endure to find success. But I wanted to ask you, do you think that mental toughness or, you know, mental strength, do you think you can become better at that? And if you can, how so? Like, how do you do it?
I 100% think you can become better at it. I think it just comes down to taking baby steps. Like, if you're uncomfortable with a big, nasty mountain hunt, just taking it in small chunks, like going out there and practicing, like going on a vacation for a couple of days and just going backpacking and then being like, well, I'm going to, you know, on this day, I'm going to go hike 4 miles over there and then set up camp and then hike 3 miles over there and not worry about how far I am from my truck. Like, just keep going, making little loops, staying out there in the dark, learning how to hike in the dark. It's going to add your mental strength. Yeah. Maybe, you know, obviously be smart if you're in grizzly country and all that stuff. But like, even when I'm in grizzly country, I realize that my mental strength is a big gift to me because I feel like a lot of times in my head, I'm like, I respect bears, but I don't want them to determine my life. If I'm living my life, I want to live my life and not be, I'm so afraid to die that I'm not living. If that makes sense.
Sure.
Like, I just want, like, you can just piece it out. Like, try something challenging. And once you get done with that, you're like, hey, I did that. I succeeded. Go next time, try something else challenging. Like, carry more weight for a more extended backpack hunt. Realize that if you're slow getting out there, it doesn't matter how fast you are. It just matters as you get there. And then the next morning, you're willing to wake up and do it again. Like, I'm so excited when I'm back there because I'm like, this is my escape from everyday life that I just want to push and push and push because I have that drive now. And once you start getting that addiction, I guess, to pushing yourself further, that's when you start getting that success. Cause you realize like, hey, 2 miles over there, if I go there, I'm going to get back at midnight tonight. Not going to get as much sleep. I'm like, well, not going to get much sleep, but I'm still having fun. I think of it all as like a fun little adventure. You're testing yourself every single day. And every time you do that, you become mentally stronger and stronger and stronger and realize you're capable of a lot more than you thought you are. The body's amazing. The mind's amazing. And as long as you keep pushing yourself and keep testing yourself. And like, I think it comes down to like, that's what I've loved. I think the biggest thing that's maybe made my mental strength better is I hunted solo forever because I had those thoughts in my head, like, hey, maybe I shouldn't do this. Maybe it's crazy. I'm out here by myself, but it's like, all my thoughts are my own. If I want to go really far away, no one's going to try to convince me not to. Or if I have someone else who's hunting with me, who's not mentally strong, they're going to eventually say like, maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe that's not a great idea. And then you're going to be like agreeing with them because they're your partner. You should do things together. And then when you go back on your solo hunts, maybe that's going to creep in your mind. Like, oh, last time I didn't really do that. You know, I'm not going to push myself as far as I did. I'm just going to stay back here. Or it's getting dark and, you know, I should be back at camp right now because I don't know how to navigate with a map in the dark and not sure exactly how to get back. But if it's daylight, I can see and see all these ridge lines and see all these stuff. And like just learning those little skills about how to be a better woodsman or whatever, like, that's all going to lead to mental toughness to stay out there, when the weather's bad, stay out there, you know, when the hunt's going bad, realize that the next day could just be the turning point and you're going to find success.
Yeah. I think of mental toughness, like when I think about the term, like what is mentally tough? What is hard when I'm out there hunting? And when I think about the, you know, the term and what it is that I'm facing when I'm out there on a long, you know, backpack hunt, it's, you know, loneliness, boredom, which, I mean, those things, I mean, a lot of your time is downtime, right? When you're backpack hunting, you got a lot of time where it's just bored. You're bored. You're lonely, especially if you're by yourself. You know, you might be hungry. You might be physically kind of stressed. You know, you might be cold. But like, those are the kinds of things that I think of when I think of mental toughness and then being able to handle those. And I think I'm with you. I mean, I think if you practice those kinds of things, you become better at them. You know, it's like the very first night, I can't remember. I did another podcast and I think the person asked me or I asked them, like, do you remember the first night that you stayed out completely on your own? I do remember. I remember it very vividly. Like, I remember being pretty scared. Like, oh, this is the first night I'm out here in the woods all by myself. You know, I was in a bivvy and head out yeah, I remember feeling pretty intimidated just by the vastness of it. I remember, you know, being in Alaska when we went on that caribou hunt and, you know, those guys took off and went back and I'm out there on the tundra by myself. And I remember those 3 days being pretty damn lonely. And I wasn't really ever scared, but there's this, like, you know, I was lonely and bored, But I don't think that you ever get to, being better at those kinds of things if you never put yourself in those situations. And I like your feedback on just, take a bite at a time. It's that old adage, right? Like, how do you eat an elephant? You eat it one bite at a time. Mm-hmm. Do little things. And I'm with you. I think mental toughness is a huge part of it. I think you have to have the physical ability, but I also think I've been way more successful due to mentality versus physicality. Mm-hmm.
I think one of the biggest ways too to swallow that and start realizing, hey, maybe to get more mentally tough, is I always try, even though it's a horrible saying, like no regrets. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, it's overplayed all the time, like, oh, hashtag no regrets and like all this stuff. But like, I don't want any regrets in my life. And I have had regrets on hunts before, where I remember specifically I went on an Oregon deer hunt for the first time way back in the mm-hmm. day. Got all the way back there, couldn't get all the way back where I wanted to, couldn't get there on opening day because of some other stuff going on. Got all the way back eventually to the basin on like the second or third day, and it was a short season. And then I saw a guy packing out. I heard a shot the night before. I was like, dang it, that was that canyon I wanted to be into. I wanted to be at that canyon, but it just took me longer because I couldn't get there opening day or beforehand and hike in there. So by the time I got there, I heard the shot. Next day I saw guys on horseback coming up over that ridge. I'm like, that had to be that guy who shot. I had this buck. Giant matching kickers off both sides, great 4x4, just gorgeous, gorgeous deer. And then I just remember thinking I had some, I had just things going on in life where I'd message from people back home. Like, I felt like, maybe I shouldn't be back here right now. The buck I wanted, didn't know that buck existed, but then I got over there. There was no deer to be found, passing up some small deer, not seeing the quality animals. And I gave up and I hiked out, and I still had 2 days left for the season. I left early. And then once I was like, I felt like at the time I needed to leave early, I wasn't mentally strong enough to stay out there and grind it, because I thought, hey, there's big buck got killed. Like, that's the big deer. All the other deer I saw were not worth shooting up here, too far in to do it. But what would have happened if I stayed those 2 days? Once I got to the truck and started driving, hit the first gas station, I was pissed.
Yeah.
I was so mad at myself for giving up. And since then, that was also a turning point where it's like, I'm never having that feeling again in my life. Like, why did I do that? Yeah. I crave all year. I work for this short amount of time I could hunt. And back then I didn't have as much time to hunt. And that was everything to me. And I quit early.
Yeah.
I wasn't mentally strong enough to stay out there to push through that difficult time. Seeing someone's success. Yeah, I'm jacked at someone shot a big deer. Mm-hmm. But I didn't grind it out and see, like, maybe there was another big deer there. Maybe I should have went further. Maybe I should analyze it different when I was out there. And that just sucked.
Yeah, no, I feel you. I've been there too. And I would assume that most people have been, and there is no feeling like that regret. Like, you're just, you gave up on yourself, you know? The other thing that I'm thinking about is, there's so many times when you're out there and you've got an objective, you're going to try to kill a buck or the buck or the bull. I find myself a lot of the time thinking there's no possible way that this is going to happen. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, I'm out here completely wasting my time. Yep. And I think probably everybody has that thought regardless of how long they've been hunting. But I think you and I are fortunate enough that we've hunted long enough and we've had enough success that we know that it can turn in an instant. Mm-hmm. So we have that like little bit of, that little glimmer, like that little shine in the back of our head going, you know what? It's probably not going to happen, but I've done it enough to know that it can. Mm-hmm. So I guess the point I'm making here and that I would pass on to anybody, like, regardless of what stage in your hunting career that you're in, if you are new to hunting and you're having those thoughts, you're out on a hunt and you're questioning yourself, like, yeah, I should probably just go home. I'm just telling you, it can change in a heartbeat.
Yep. Yep.
It can happen.
And speaking of changing in the heartbeat, like, that's why that experience and that hunt helped me be successful on a hunt the year after. Because literally I hunted another state, didn't kill a deer early. I decided to go back on the late hunt. It was literally only 2 days left of the season. I had to work all day. I was like, screw it. There's only 2 days left of the season. Seems kind of crazy to drive, three states away, drive all night. Got to the trailhead super early in the morning. I saw the weather forecast. It snowed the entire Saturday. I couldn't hunt all of Saturday. All I was doing is drove all night. Got to a trailhead, started hiking right away, hiked in a snowstorm all day, couldn't see anything. But I'm like, the storm's got to break. The weather says it's going to break Saturday night, and then there's only 1 day left of hunting. But I still went and still did that hunt. That morning, I woke up early, blue skies, completely no snow anymore. I had like a foot and a half of snow in my tent, woke up, hiked just a little bit down the ridge, put my binos up. It's one of the most magical things ever. It was $14 better than the snow in this basin. Literally right. $14. I basically awesome. Like kind of skied my way down, like not skied literally, but like it felt the snow was so deep mm-hmm. on my boots. I was like literally like skiing my way down to this little rock outcropping, laid right there, shot this big buck with an inline. And it was the coolest thing ever. I was like back, if I had that same feeling I had on the Oregon hunt, I would have not done that. Cause like, oh, it's just 2 days. That's not long enough to try to kill an animal on a backpack mm-hmm. hunt, driving multiple states. But I pushed through it and had the mental toughness. Like all I need is that one chance. And that one morning,
yeah.
everything lined up. The last day of the season, killed the buck. And there was no one else hunting because it's, you know, a big weather storm, but it was perfect. Cause I had the toughness and the drive to push myself to get to that spot and not give up.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's a cool story. And yeah, I just reiterate, man, just stay in it. Even if you have to bite a small, you know, if you got to talk yourself into saying, I'm going to stay 10 more minutes. And then you get to that 10 minutes, I'm going to stay 10 more minutes. And you just keep chipping away at it until you're there and you do it again the next day. So stick with it. I wanted to ask you maybe just kind of some, you know, planning prep theory type questions on how you approach hunts. What do you think is more important? Do you think preseason online map scouting, or do you think developing skills that could help you be successful, like shooting your bow, shooting your rifle, you know, working out, lifting weights, running, getting in better shape, working with your layering systems or with your gear? Do you think that one of those is more important than the other?
That's a tough one because I do feel like all those do add to it. And I will always say that you need to have a well-rounded toolkit. So mm-hmm. if you become proficient at a lot of different things, that means you're really good at basically everything. And then eventually your toolkit is just dialed to the point where you can be successful. So I think a lot of people, though, they might focus on a few things only, like they're really good at working out. You know, all they do is train all year, or all they do is think of the best gear and get their gear dialed and just look at their gear, but they don't use their gear. They don't know how to function in the mountains. So you have to, if you're dialed in your gear and want to buy the best stuff, well, you have to be able to use it, understand how it works together. Or if you're just a person who goes out there and shoots your bow all the time, like, sure, that can be great. But you don't know how to move around the mountains. You don't know how to e-scout. You don't know how to do everything else. So I think you need a combo of all of that. But saying that, though, I do think for me, I try to do really psycho shooting. Like, obviously, I'm a rifle guy now, so I will shoot all year, prep my rifle, know exactly how it works, track every single round I shoot down the barrel, how it shoots when it's cold, how it shoots when it's hot, how it shoots after three cleans, that like just everything's just dialed in my rifle. So I do a lot of rifle stuff, which I think helps me. But I think a lot of the mapping side of it, the pre-hunt prep can also aid in my success. I'll always say it till the day I die that I don't think you could find a giant animal with a map. Like I can't just look at a map like there's going to be a 380-inch bull or a 200-inch mule deer in this basin. But what I can do is figure out where deer are probably going to be and put myself in that best position, then hope, like, you know, I have the right pieces to figure out deer habitat and deer biology and know where an animal's going to be, and then use that to my advantage, and I can figure out backup spots around there and probably turn up a decent deer. Yeah, I might not get lucky every single time because I can't put boots on the ground all the time, but I try to think of like it's a combo of all of that. Eventually you're going to be really good at map scouting, eventually you're going to be really good at shooting, eventually you'll be really good at gear. I do feel like a lot of people discredit e-scouting in a sense. You're like, oh, it's not boots on the ground. I don't know what the terrain looks like. I don't know what the glassing stuff is. But like, how many times do people sit around and watch TV all the time in our generation?
I did last night. I started a new series. I'll have to give you a recommendation after we're done.
Yes.
I think you'd be into it. It's pretty interesting.
And I'm all for that. And I do watch shows too, like everyone else. I watch YouTube. I watch, you know, hunting videos every now and then. But I think about all this time that we're doing other things when we could be e-scouting. Like, I don't think people really e-scout the way they should be e-scouting. Like literally knowing a unit like the back of your hand. Like I know we joke sometimes, but like I go into a unit and I have 150 waypoints already dropped. Yeah, some of those might be horrible, but I have a plan. Like I know how to glass from something. I know what that terrain looks like. I'll mark the layers. I go, that looks really bucky. Sometimes it turns out it's really bucky and it works really well. But then I analyze that terrain when I come back, figure out why that terrain was so productive, when those deer get up, use that to my future hunts. I always say it's like, you know, I'm extrapolating all the information I see on a hunt. I'm marking all those animals I'm seeing on that hunt and then use that map stuff later. So like, there's so much time in our life that we could be doing other things and enjoy, like, yeah, getting freedom and watching movies and relaxing is great. But like, I feel like people don't e-scout with a purpose, trying to figure out that. And that mm-hmm. could be some of the biggest things to, yeah, it's not going to lead to success. You still need to know how to stalk an animal, how to have the right gear. But once you start, you know, utilizing that, pretty soon mapping research becomes something you're really sharp at, one of the sharpest things in your mm-hmm. toolkit. And then if you're really good at proficient with your weapon, you can shoot under pressure. You've shot in tournament situations. You've shot whatever, in our case, with cameras on, doing all that stuff adds pressure to it. And then you add the gear, and then you add the preseason prep of hiking and knowing how to use that gear, then you become lethal.
Yeah.
Like once you're really good at all those things, and you are like, to me, a lot of times my weakest thing is the one I need to work on the most. Like I know I'm not the strongest person in the world, and I run all the time. I know I need to work on strength. I know if I'm working on strength more, my recovery is going to be a lot easier than the mountains. Like I have endurance. Mm-hmm. Like I have crazy low heart rate. I can run forever. I feel like I can hike up a mountain because I have super long legs. But then, you know, some of those days where you're packing a lot of weight, that first day going in, packing 70 some pounds, next day I'm probably mm-hmm. not going to recover as fast. So I need to work on the weak things. I know if I, you know, can't shoot a rifle or can't judge wind, I'm probably going to go out there and probably try to judge wind and work on a rifle shot, try to work on those little things to become proficient. Mm-hmm. And then I'm a well-rounded hunter. If you become a well-rounded hunter, I literally feel like you are lethal. Lethal in a good way.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great answer. I mean, I concur completely. I think you have to be able to do both. I think I've always been kind of one of those, not a naysayer by any means, because I agree with you. I think you have to do both. You have to have a good idea of where you're going to go. But I've often thought that, you know, kind of the difference, at least for me anyway, is like in the other things, like knowing how my layering system works, knowing how to set up my tent in a storm, you know, mm-hmm. knowing how I shoot my bow under pressure. Like those are all things that I feel like lend themselves probably more to success, because I feel like I could go into an area and figure it out even if I haven't done a whole bunch of pre-scouting. But that's me coming from, you know, having hunted a lot in my life and grown up in the West, right?
Yep.
But I do think you have to be able to do both. And I do like your point that we waste a lot of time. We often, I mean, I'm guilty of this. Like I don't do the things that I don't like to do. Like I don't like weightlifting, you know, but you make a great point about my ability to recover, because I don't recover all that well day in and day out.
Yeah. and another, while you're clearing yourself voice there, another thing too,
sorry,
working out and shooting a bow and shooting a rifle, those are sexy mm-hmm. things. Those are things that people love to post on the gram. It's like, you're doing something, you're accomplishing something. It looks good. It looks like you're getting out and doing stuff. Do you see mm-hmm. anyone ever being like, oh, I just did 3 hours of map scouting tonight? No one ever is going to share that, because it's not something sexy. It's not something that like seems like you're doing something cool, but working out's cool. Going on a run's cool. Throwing my sweaty hat out there every single day, that feels cool to me. Or shooting your bow, you know, and launching some arrows mm-hmm. and showing your group size on Instagram. Like that's a cool thing. People like doing the cool things, but the things you're not good at, those are the things we need to work on.
Yeah, I've always said legs and lungs kill animals, and I'll stick to that till the day I die. I think legs and lungs is what kills an animal, but I can tell you one thing is it doesn't pack them out all that well.
Nope, it does not pack them out that well. Like,
I've had some hellish days packing animals when unequivocally I can tell you I would have been a lot better off if I had spent some time doing some cross training.
Yeah, and one thing that really opened my eyes too, you weren't on this one, but last week we had Dustin a Mountain Tough on the Big Hunt Guys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was like, Brady, when do you think you felt the best in your physical performance in your life in the mountains? And I sat there for a little bit and thought about it. And it's like, I've kind of touched on it before, but it literally was the year when I was like 205. Mm-hmm. Not when I was a jack 205. I didn't quite run as much as I do now, so I didn't have the lungs. But I do agree with you fully. Legs and lungs are going to kill. But I just felt so good every single day. Like I could keep going. I could keep recovering every day. I could pack long distances. I might've been a little bit slower, but I had the strength to do it. And then I had the strength to recover every day. Like those are the days I crushed. Like I crush now, but I know when I am stronger, even if it's a back, like I'm not talking about strong biceps or stuff that really doesn't do anything, but super strong quads, strong calves, strong core, strong back. It was because like you're working all those muscles constantly. When I was super jacked and over 200 pounds, which is hard to me, I can't, my body sits right now like 188. That's like a normal body weight. But like when I work out and get muscle strength, I do feel like those days I do feel better on a long hunt for having, you know, some strength.
There's probably value in thinking about the flip side of the coin is what days did you feel the worst?
Yeah.
And I can tell you what days I've felt the worst. It's usually when I've got a 90-pound pack on my back and I've got 5 or 6 miles to, you know, haul out a quarter or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, I've definitely had days like that where I'm like, I hate this.
Yeah. And then you feel bad too, because like, oh, that might be your animal. And then the next day you're turned on for your buddies and now you're exhausted. Mm-hmm. You're not trying to do as much because you're physically exhausted to try to help him kill. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep. I hear you. I got a question for you about gear. I wanted to touch on some gear. Can you think of a piece of hunting gear that's maintained its place in your pack over the years? Like, what are the old reliables for you? And like, what categories do you think there is value in buying a good piece of gear?
Gosh, Trail. How are you so good at asking these questions?
I thought about it, man. I try to prep. What do you tell people when they ask you, like, where should I spend my money?
Where should you spend your money? The thing that I think that's proven the test of time, and this is not anything brand specific or anything, for my style of hunting, it literally made the switch. I could stay out there longer. I could be more effective in nasty weather condition. Is literally a teepee and a stove.
Interesting.
That one piece of gear has allowed me to be more comfortable with the uncomfortable. It literally has. I know I can put up a teepee, have a wood stove. If it's raining out, all my gear's wet. Yeah, I might have the best of the best rain gear or whatever gear, but I know I can dry it off.
You're going to get wet.
I'm going to get wet. I know I can dry my boots off. Yeah, I always tell people spend money on boots, you know, backpack, that sort of thing. Those are very important, but I can dry my boots out now. I can dry my backpack off. I can dry the gear. I can have water when I might not be able to have water because I'm hunting in the snow and there might not be water close by. Like, I can now stay out there longer and hunt more effectively in some of the places I like to love to hunt. And it is true, like, I do love the suck too. So I enjoy those snowy, wet conditions, rainy places. But that piece of gear, it's like, it's a mental reset too. Because that stove starts warming up, I'm like, it's not that bad. Like, yeah, it might be raining out right now and snowing, but it's dark out, it's night. I'm in here, Africa hot, 75 degrees with a t-shirt on, just loving life. Maybe I got some tunes on my phone, maybe listen to a podcast at low volume. Life is great right now. I'm so motivated for the next day. That allows me to kind of stay out there longer. And now I pack a teepee and I'll probably pack a stove on almost all my hunts because it rains all the time or it's going to snow on me.
I mean, I could tell you there is not a couch on the planet. There's not a, you know, a beach with a perfect chair or a poolside setting on the planet that is more comfortable than a teepee with a stove that's just freshly fired up on a cold day when you've been out hunting and your gear is wet. You cannot replicate that feeling other than that. It's the most comfortable, just warm. It just warms you up.
Yeah.
Your whole psyche feels better. You just feel better mentally. You feel better physically. It's a reset for sure.
Yep.
I agree with you there.
That was a great way to put it. And then, like, if you didn't have that, just think of how miserable your next day is. You wake up in the morning, your boots are frozen now. Your rain gear is soaked all the way through. Your mittens that you had, your gloves are soaked. You have to put those on and you're going to try to go out there and glass. Well, if you're going to not try to go out there and glass or stalk an animal or try to call in an elk, you're probably thinking about how cold you are. You're probably not thinking about, I need to stay out here longer and stay out here longer. Maybe that tent feels better. I can hop in my sleeping bag. I can do that. But like the night before, I got my reset, where you're not thinking about a reset while you're hunting. So since I started hunting with a stove and a teepee, it just allows me to do things that I probably wouldn't. I'd still be able to do it, but I wouldn't be able to go as long or have that mental toughness then again. This adds to that mental toughness, being comfortable.
Yeah. Do it as well. That's a good answer. And I didn't anticipate that. So I appreciate you thinking out of the box a little bit.
I bet you thought I was going to go optic wise.
Yeah. I mean, I thought you'd go optics, you know, boots, packs, kind of your staple answer. So I appreciate the fact that you thought a little bit out of the box and you highlighted something that I hunt a little bit different and I hunt seasonally. I hunt different hunts than you do. Right. So a teepee and a stove isn't necessarily as important to me in the first week of September as it would be the last week in October. Mm-hmm. But I've definitely been in those situations. I mean, your moose hunt just came out, you know. Moose hunt. I did a moose hunt in Alaska, and man, I looked forward to that stove every single night. We cooked on it, dried our gear off. It was like, I mean, that it couldn't have been, there's not a Four Seasons on the planet that could have felt as good as that tent did at night after a long day in the rain.
Yeah. Like you said, cooking on one, like, when you have fish in Alaska, catching some fish, throwing a little pan or whatever you have there and putting it on top of that wood burning stove and cooking it up, or you got some tortillas, or you have something you just want to heat up a little bit at night, or it's just a great.
Yeah. We'd brought some bacon. We brought some cheese. We brought some dehydrated mushrooms, and then we brought some like cans of tomato soup. And I remember the one night we heated up cans of tomato soup. We put dehydrated mushrooms in them. We fried up some bacon. We dropped that in there. It was kind of a hodgepodge, but I mean, that meal was good enough that I still remember it. It's like I have a visceral reaction to thinking about that moment.
Yep.
You know, it's like a real cherished moment, and I don't think you can't replicate that anywhere. And nope. And that's really only allowable by, you know, like you're saying, stove and location and setting. Mm-hmm.
And even like in early season hunts too, like lately I've still carried some different form of a teepee, but I do kind of like the room it allows me to have. Like, sure. Yeah, sure. I love a one man. I used to use one man shelters all the time because they're super lightweight, but having a bigger vestibule area, but like a, you know, shelter, I have tons of place to put my gear. I can get my clothes on in there really comfortably. I don't mind just sleeping on the dirt. Sure, I might have a few bugs or spiders crawling on me, but it doesn't bug me, no pun intended, too much, you know? But it's like, it's kind of, I don't need to carry the stove all the time, but I have the option to maybe keep a stove in my truck. Maybe I can maybe come back down if I need to grab, if weather changes, I have that ability to, you know, stay out there longer.
Yeah. All right. I've had you for an hour and 15, and Porter's probably going to get mad if I don't get you back to normal work here in a minute, but, I got a couple questions. One of them is how does somebody become a Brady Miller? Like, how do they pursue a job in this profession? You know, would you recommend it? Do you think the hunting industry is like, would you advise somebody to get into the hunting industry if they like to hunt? And if so, how would you suggest that they do that?
Yeah, I mean, I say if someone is truly, truly passionate about something, and it is something you have to ask yourself if you truly want to make it your job, because yes, it does become, it's a job still at the end of the day.
Like, are you glad that you made it your profession?
I am. I will say I am, because this is literally growing up the one thing I always talked about, the one thing I always felt like I was meant to do, kind of what I'm doing now. Like, I love giving back. I love helping people. Getting into it, though, for the right reasons, you're not going to get into it and be like, oh, you're just hunting for a living. That's not really what we do. It's like, you know, right now, writing all the time, app strategies, you know, answering, you know, all sorts of different things. And like, it's work. It's a job. There's a lot of long nights. There's a lot of early mornings. But when you're passionate about something, it doesn't really feel like a lot of work to me sometimes, because I enjoy it. I enjoy the times when someone sends me an email or a DM that, hey, I helped them out, or helped them think differently, or helped them get motivated in life to get in better shape, to go pursue crazy adventures. So if it is something you're truly, truly passionate about, and you've thought about it, and you understand it's not all just glory days. There's some days where it's a grind. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I think it's something I'm passionate about, and I love helping people. So that's why I come into it, as I like to help others. And because I wasn't fortunate to grow up in the West. I grew up in Minnesota. So to me, I got into it because I love sharing my adventures with family. I loved, you know, writing, love that avenue of, you know, photography and all this stuff. So I think if you want to be in it, think about it first and how you would get into it. I mean, that's still a very difficult answer to answer, because it is kind of hard to get into, but it's just connecting with people, like figuring out what your niches are. You know, you can look at right now, what's this world becoming? Well, we're becoming more glued to technology, unfortunately, but we're all glued to videos, and there's going to be endless opportunities for people who are really good at videos, video editing. Social media is not going to probably go away for a while. So if you're really good at that, maybe start figuring out those avenues where you could be beneficial to a company in the outdoor space, hunting industry, make that your niche, start showcasing stuff you do. You know, don't go out of the way and fake a bunch of stuff. Do it real, do it right. Do it, make it known that you're passionate about whatever it is you're doing. If you want to be a good writer, just pitching out to companies about, hey, would you be willing to publish articles about it? Maybe expect you're not going to probably get paid at first. Like, I did a lot of freelance writing in the hunting industry before, and I maybe got like sometimes $30 for an article. Like, I was like, my time is worth way more than that. But I knew I wanted to get my name out there. I wanted to do something slowly or connect with people. Like, a lot of times, you know, people have budgets set and all that stuff, and they can't afford to pay a lot. But like, if you become a benefit to that company, or you become friends with that company, or go out and meet them, or meet them at shows, or stop by and talk to an archery shop, or just get, you know, maybe say you want to donate some time and start helping an archery shop build some arrows. Maybe that could lead you to working with someone else in an outdoor industry because you're always at an archery shop. Like, you never know how it could lead to your future, but just try taking a risk and seeing where it lays. Cause like biggest thing is sure. Like if you, you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah.
Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
Best quote ever. Yeah, you know, yeah, Wayne Gretzky, Wayne Gretzky crossed Michael Scott.
Yeah. I saw something the other day about Gretzky that said if he'd have never scored a goal in the NHL, he would still be the single greatest points leader in the NHL.
That's crazy.
So the guy was a legend, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, incredible. No, that's good advice, man. You had a lot. That's like one of those ones where as I'm talking to you and I'm listening, it's one where I would like to go back and listen to it myself because I think there's some things inside that you said that I think that would be applicable. It's a hard question to answer for folks. You know,
it really is. And it's hard to try to give that exact advice. I had someone the other day send me a DM and I told him I gave him my email address, like shoot me an email. I'll try to maybe give some pointers, but I hope you just listen to this part of this podcast because it's hard. It's very competitive in a sense too, but I think a lot of people probably get into it for, you know, the wrong reasons sometimes too. That's why I think you really have to think about why you want to do it. What can you contribute? Like, how are you wanting to go about this? If you just are passionate about it, sure. Maybe the niche to make a video editor or a, you know, photographer or a video guy, but like, why do you want to do it? I think you need to think about it first.
Yeah. Video and photo, I think it's a good advice. I like it. And I'm not a huge fan of social media. I consume it. I don't post often myself, but I certainly don't see it going away either. And I continue to see it as a, you know, an avenue to get messages out. I mean, we had Hal and then CRWM. I mean, I think it's a critical avenue for us and an industry, you know, hunting in general, to put our message out there to people. And I think it's the quickest way to do so. Yeah, that's an interesting question. People ask me a lot, and I've answered it, I think, probably a variety of ways over the years. You know, I've always just said, like, if your passion is hunting, if you're really doing it because you love it and you're good at it, you know, lean into what you're good at and do it to death. You know, it'll kind of find you, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe. I also like what you said just about making connections, because I, you know, my job, my ability to provide a living for my family, it really does land on a connection. You know, I made a connection with an individual. He suggested, hey, this guy Trail, he might be good for your company and what you're trying to do. And I got a leg up. So, I guess be open to connections, right? Mm-hmm. Talk to people.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to reach out to folks and try to make connections, because I think connections is still the best way.
And then sometimes you might just have to invest in yourself too. Like, you know, maybe buy some gear that you want, or set up a blog and start writing articles and posting them there, or create a YouTube channel. And maybe your thing is you love gear and you're a hiker and you do hunting as well. Maybe start just doing more gear videos, doing more articles. Like, you never know. Eventually then you have a library. Like, well, if you reach out to me, what kind of content have you ever written before? Like, a good place to send me then, so I can read some stuff, you know. It could lead to things. You never know. And you might think it's crazy because you're not making any money, but you probably could be having a slight impact on people. And eventually, like I said, that connection side will roll into it and could lead you somewhere. But you might be losing money for a while, but if you're passionate about it, it's still going to be fun. And you never know where the road will take you.
Yeah. All right. I got one more quick one. You can just make this as quick as possible. What is one piece? Wrap it up in a bow, nice Christmas present under the tree. One piece of advice for a new hunter. What would you tell them?
One piece of advice for a new hunter: knowledge is power.
I like it.
Knowledge is power. So, be a sponge, consume everything you can. Don't just consume one avenue, consume everything, learn everything you can about what you're going to do, and be bought all in on just being a hunter. And if it's Western hunter, learn everything you can before you go out.
Yep. I love it. I love it, Brady. Well, I've kept you for an hour, almost an hour and a half. I'm going to cut you loose. I appreciate you doing this. It was really fun. I knew it would be fun.
I didn't expect the type of questions you have, but now that you asked them all, I'm like, oh yeah, this is a trail. These are trail type questions, and I really appreciate it all. And it was really fun to just talk about random stuff and just, like you said, catch up. And how we don't get to catch up like this too often. Heck, yeah, we hang out, but not sit around and just ask random stuff.
I mean, here's the thing. I can bullshit with the best of them, but it's usually a better product if I actually put some thought into it and put pen to paper and come up with some ideas. So hopefully I didn't catch you too off guard with too many questions. I thought you did an awesome job at answering it anyway.
No, I'm excited for this one to come out. And
cool.
Yeah, I'm glad I finally made it to the game trail. I feel like I accomplished something.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Keep doing what you're doing,
Trail. Have a good afternoon.
For people who don't know, they should definitely listen to all the old episodes. I even jump back in there and listen to the game trail. So you've definitely carved yourself a good niche here, and I like your podcast a lot.
Thanks, man. I'm gonna try to do more. Like I said, I'm in a place now where I'm caught up a bit more, and I can get more of them out, and I can focus a little bit more time and effort into these. These are the ones that are fun. Like, these are the ones I really like. The other one, you know, the ones that I do solo by myself, I like doing them because it gives me an opportunity to like get things off my chest, you know, and talk about things. But those take me a really long time to prep and do on my own. Even if they don't sound like it for me, that's like a real stretch for me. Okay. Those solo episodes are hard for me, but I've got some more time to put into it now.
Can I ask you a closing question?
Yeah, please.
What do you like most about doing your Game Trail podcast?
What do I like most about it?
Yeah.
I like conversations like this. Like, to me, this doesn't feel like work at all. Like, this is part of my job. I work at Go Hunt. It's a podcast we put out through our platform. This doesn't feel like work at all. This feels like a good time. Like, to sit down at my computer and, you know, think about you, think about your personality, think about our relationship, put together questions that I think are going to be interesting and engaging, and things that I want to know about you. That's fun for me. And then just to have, you know, an hour and a half long conversation with somebody that I respect. I also don't get a chance to do this kind of thing with you. Like, people don't sit down and talk.
No, they don't.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, people don't do this, especially during their work day, you know, and I really don't do this. I'm a hermit. Like, I'm a loner big time. So for me, this is fun. These are the kinds of things that I like. So this is my favorite part about having a podcast, is just when I get a chance to sit down and chit chat with somebody and catch up. It doesn't feel like work at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I like it, Trail. Yeah.
Well, thanks.
That was a good one.
Thanks for doing it, bud. I appreciate it. Hey. Don't die a heat stroke down there in Vegas.
I'll try not to. Thanks again for having me,
bud. Yeah, we'll catch up next week. Bye.